Now, we are talking about the science of love this week, but since we're talking about the science of love and mating behaviour, why don't we look particularly at the purpose, evolutionarily speaking, of actually going to all that bother? It's a lot of hassle having to send Valentine's Day cards, having to buy boxes of chocolates and cook nice dinners. Why do we bother at all? Well, to help us understand a bit about the benefit of having sex in the first place is Robert Foley. He's the director of the Leverhulme Centre for Human Evolutionary Studies at Cambridge University. Robert, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us on The Naked Scientist. So, why have sex at all? Why aren't we just cloning ourselves, reproducing ourselves? Why don't we just give birth to a copy of ourselves and populate the world with millions of clones of ourselves like greenfly do?
Well, I mean, sex has been around for millions and millions of years and is one of the ways of evolution operating. We don't fully understand why having two sexes rather than just one is the best thing, but once you've got it, it's absolutely critical. We often think of evolution as simply the survival of the fittest. It's how long you live that matters. It's not. It's how many offspring you have. It's how many of your genes you can get into the next generation. So for a sexually reproducing organism, such as any animal, it's absolutely critical, your mating behaviour and how you bring up your young. So much selection is focused on getting it right.
What is the benefit of having two sexes and mixing genes up the way that effectively sex between two genetically unrelated individuals does?
There have been a number of theories. Probably the best one is that it really jumbles up the genes in such a way that it partly allows organisms to adapt to new environments. So as the environment changes, you're not stuck with something by endlessly re-scrambling. You're raising, in a sort of lottery sense, the chances of something better coming, which will help you survive. And the other is that probably the ability to resist disease is one of the critical factors in this, because we know that some of the diseases associated with some of the genes associated with resisting disease are ones that evolve very rapidly and therefore would benefit from this reshuffling.
I suppose nature's full of good examples of what happens if you do just clone yourself, isn't it? We have potato famines in Ireland. We have the loss of the Cavendish banana because of Panama disease, because bananas are all clones, aren't they? So I suppose that there is obviously a benefit because we're still here. We haven't succumbed to some horrible disease because we have sex.
Yes, I think both systems, asexual and sexual reproduction, work very well in the right context. But I think once you're into very complex organisms, of which humans, primates, monkeys, animals, whatever, are some, it probably just would be completely impossible to deal with this asexually.
But what sort of flies in the face of what you're saying, Robert, is the fact that I chose my wife and I've married her, I have two children with her. If I wanted to mix my genes up as much as possible, then I wouldn't just stick with one person. So why do I want to do that?
Well, if we look again, it's easiest to sort of look across animals and we see immediately there's an enormous variety of ways of reproducing, and monogamy is just one. It's actually a very rare one. Most animals will mate in a very promiscuous way and then move on to the next partner. If we try and ask the question, under what circumstances do animals stay with one partner? The answer is, broadly speaking, it's where the costs of bringing up offspring are very high. And we know with humans, we have take a long time to grow, we have a large brain, it's very expensive for the mother. And so somewhere in our evolutionary past, there has been a general tendency to increase the amount of parental care. And that means that females have to be very choosy and males have to hang around and help bring up the offspring in some way or another.
It's interesting, though, because if you look at those voles that Larry Young was talking about earlier in the programme, they have very large litters, and the costs are not that high because they're just sort of producing so many offspring that there's a chance they're going to survive no matter what. So does that same rule apply there?
Well, there are a number of different reasons why. The other reason is where a male might not be able to defend an area or defend a number of females. In that sense, he's forced into monogamy. I think you know, one shouldn't get too fixed ideas about monogamy and other forms. Actually, in practice, most animals are very flexible. They take the opportunities. So even birds that we think of as highly monogamous, turns out that something like 15% of their offspring are actually fathered by another bird floating in and taking up the opportunities.
That was delicately put, Robert. Thank you very much. That's Robert Foley, who is from the Leverhulme Centre for Human Evolutionary Studies at Cambridge University. And I think the stat is that perhaps up to one in five humans doesn't have the father that they think they do. It's a worrying thought, isn't it, Helen?